Hello, and welcome to the Mayo Report on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be discussing the top 300 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month. In this episode, we are talking about the top trade sales through Diamond to retailers, predominantly North America, for March 2020. To some extent, I think this sort of ends the final order era through Diamond exclusively, because, in April, Diamond didn't ship anything, and starting the tail end of April, we started getting Lunar and UCS, two new distributors that are run by DCBS and Midtown Comics, starting to distribute stuff for DC. And then in, I think, May 20th is when Diamond's going to start shipping stuff, including from DC, and kind of getting the train back rolling on the direct market. March is just such a weird month in terms of we started the month full steam ahead, ended at a dead stop. But I think we need to talk about what the numbers are we're looking at, because this is final orders, which means it is what Diamond invoiced to the stores for things the stores got during the calendar month of March. Most of that stuff would have been ordered in January, a few things in February, some stuff earlier because we've got a lot more reorder activity kind of going on the trade side than we have on the comic side. But because it is pre-order based, we're seeing sales expectations prior to the pandemic.
I think that's the best way to look at it, for sure.
And I have the opinion that we've had certain sales trends over the last couple of years, the last couple of decades. Things have fundamentally changed during March, absolutely during April, and moving forward for how comics are distributed, people's paychecks, and the economic and health impact of the pandemic itself. And a lot of people just having that break from the monthly comic habit are taking a step back thinking, is this really where I want to spend my time? Some may go whole hog into it for the escapist entertainment. Some may pull out and say, you know what? I think there are other ways I want to spend my time. So I'm looking at all of our sales trends that we've had over the last, decades, open to interpretation as to whether they continue or not. And until we start getting data, really until we start getting the June, July, August data, almost putting the entire direct market back into kind of that honeymoon phase of, let's see how this is all working out, we're really not going to know for a while if these sales trends still hold water or if things have fundamentally shifted in some respect.
Yeah, I think it's especially with the coming of two new potential distributors, we'll see if that's a long-term play or if there's going to be some changes by Diamond in reaction to that, or a lot of things are up in the air and it'll be interesting. We always say it'll be interesting the next couple months, but I think especially the next year or so will be very interesting in the direct market. Let's put it that way.
It's certainly I would say one of the most pivotal times in the direct market since, with the only other two being the formation of the direct market and the distributor wars that started when Marvel self-distributed through Heroes World and ended, resulting in Diamond being the last distributor standing.
Mm-hmm.
So with those two events aside, this is, I think, the biggest shift in terms of stopping of distribution and now two other distributors coming up to compete. It's a game changer in some respect.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it a game ender? Is it something that's going to be fundamentally good for the industry? Is it a short-term thing, like you said? Because again, the Heroes World stuff was a game changer. Lasted, I don't know, about 2 years or so. And with all, respect to DCBS and Midtown, trying to spin up a new comic book distributor is a large ask. Trying to do it during a pandemic is a large ask. Trying to do it within a few weeks' time is a large ask. And to do all of that together, I mean, hats off to them for even making it happen, and we'll see how successful it is.
Yeah, no, for sure. And that was one of the first questions I had is, there was a lot of pushback by members of the direct market on messaging boards and in article responses and in comments when the new distributor became to light. And I'm just wondering if there's going to be a big pushback against them, the cost to get all that stuff started. Now, obviously, DCBS and Midtown have a little bit, is probably why DC went with them, have some advantages. And then they have some of the infrastructure set up because they do so much mail order business. But at the same time, if that business doesn't grow for those two new distributors, at some point, are they going to say, this just isn't worth, you know, the investment? Because at a certain point, you have to have, a base level of sales in order to kind of, unless DC gave them really, really nice terms at the beginning to get them off the ground.
There is the question of is if DC is somehow subsidizing this or something of the sort. Don't know. Wouldn't surprise me if that is the case. My understanding of the way things are happening is because Diamond was not distributing, other options were needed. Okay, that makes sense. You want to get your product out there. You can't sell if you can't get it to market. And that the nature of these deals is Lunar and UCS are going straight to DC. Diamond is not in the loop whatsoever.
Okay.
Okay, so if DCBS was getting 1,000 DC comics or whatever, or 10,000, you know, whatever number it is, X. Those X units are not going to show up in the future on the Diamond charts, because if I were DCBS, I would use Lunar, the distributor I just started.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, is it worth it for DCBS to have started Lunar, for Midtown to have started UCS? I'm going to go with the assumption of, well, yes, it was, because they did it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know the people behind Midtown. I've talked with Cameron and Christine over the years at DCBS, shopped with them for 13 years. They are smart people. I would be shocked if they did something without having done the due diligence to make sure it made sense and would work out for them. Now, whether it does work out, hard to gauge what the retailers are going to do, all that kind of a stuff, we'll see. But I've got to imagine that as a distributor, Lunar and UCS are getting a better deal through from DC than a store would get through Diamond.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
So at the very least, you know, DCBS is hopefully going to see some sort of a benefit through that. Now, the other thing that DCBS and Midtown, or more accurately, Lunar and UCS are going to see as benefits is that all of the other retailers that decide to use them for distribution, all of that volume is going through them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that means it's volume not going through Diamond. Okay, that's not good for Diamond, but it doesn't really help or hurt, you know, DCBS or Midtown, but it means all of the retailers who took X dollars of their DC purchases out of Diamond over to this other distributor lowers eventually their discount level at Diamond for some items, which is going to make them less profitable. And the higher threshold presumably will do UCS and Lunar some benefit to get possibly a better deal or something like that. I don't know what the terms are, I'm guessing, on all of this stuff. The part I don't understand is, if I were a retailer, what would be the benefit to me to going with one of these two new distributors over staying with Diamond, where I've already got an account, the sales of DC factor into my overall discount on other items and such, and it's less overhead to deal with one distributor versus multiple?
Well, absolutely. I think that's the, you know, if, and that's where I thought the existential question for me was, these two new distributors have to, at some point, establish accounts with the other publishers. Otherwise, I don't know why a retailer would want to deal with, you know, one distributor for one publisher and then one for the other. You know, it's just such an inherent advantage for Diamond. Now, obviously, Diamond has its own issues and, you know, it hasn't had a lot of competition pressure for a while. But just the idea of, if all these two new distributors have is DC, in the long run, I don't see how that's sustainable. You know, they need to bring other publishers on, and that's what I'm just wondering about. Is this a sustainable business? You know, obviously, like you said, the people that are running them are generally, you know, pretty smart and have survived, if not thrived, in the current direct market. So it will be interesting to see if they're able to bring on, you know, the other publishers and with terms that are acceptable or, you know, competitive. Because one of the things I've been reading online is some of the offers from these two new distributors to the stores, you know, the shipping isn't as competitive, or there's other charges where it's just, it's not as, you know, it's not as good of a deal as Diamond. And if that's the case, why would someone switch? And obviously, like you said at the beginning, this was a kind of a solution to a problem that exists in that Diamond shut down shipping. So maybe if you really needed DC books, you'd have to bite the bullet and accept the higher shipping charges or the not as good terms. But in the long run, that's not, you know, if Diamond has better terms, even though people always complain about Diamond, they're still going to stick with Diamond, you know?
if these two new distributors had come out when they did and the pandemic had just never happened, we'd be having a very different discussion.
Yeah.
Because that would have not had the time pressure on these distributors to come out when they did. Because these distributors are in the position of being brand new. Now, granted, DCBS has been doing mail order to consumers for, you know, 15 years or so. I forget how long they've been around. They've been around a good couple of years before I started dealing with them. Actually, well over 15, I would think, because I stopped dealing with them a few years ago just for a couple of reasons. I mean, they were a great company to deal with when I was a customer there, so no disrespect at all. But both of these two are brand new distributors. They don't have the volume to be swinging the shipping deals that Diamond has. Mm-hmm. They don't have the infrastructure Diamond has in terms of physical stuff, like the fancy distribution center Diamond's got in one of their locations. They don't have the technological infrastructure and such, the website, the order forms, the point of sale system, all of those sorts of things. So for any retailer that is getting heavy use out of Diamond's point of sale system, how easy is it going to be to get something from another distributor kind of into that system and into your workflow? I don't know, but it's something that I think retailers need to be thinking about. And I'm sure there is a good reason to deal with these new distributors. And certainly if you're very unhappy with Diamond or not getting good service, you want to look elsewhere. But it's one thing to have, like you said, the one publisher. Now, granted, DC is, I don't know, 25, 30, 35% of the market, depending. So other than Marvel, I think DC is the only single publisher that would be worthwhile even attempting to start a new distributor with. But let's look at history. Marvel is about half the market, and when they tried to self-distribute back with the Heroes World stuff, and I'm not sure off the top of my head exactly how big of a percentage of the market they were back then, that lasted a few years and just didn't quite work.
Mm-hmm.
But the big thing is DC has broken exclusivity with Diamond. Now the question is if other publishers do that. Because to your point, if you start getting other publishers, it shifts the game a little. Now, keep in mind, if every other publisher were to go non-exclusive and start dealing with these other publishers, except, say, Marvel, that still gives Diamond a lock on half the market, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
So where do you get the economies of scale? Where does it become worthwhile to be dealing with multiple distributors? And Diamond is not perfect. No argument there whatsoever. There's room for improvement. But they've been a de facto monopoly in comic book distribution for 25 years or so.
Mm-hmm.
And while people have complaints, and I think some legitimate ones, they have not been a bad force on the market. They have not acted in, you know, unethical manners and things of that sort. I think they've done well by the direct market. And certainly I think some retailers are sticking with them out of kind of thanks for that and out of seeing the inherent risk of taking what is one of the stabilizing influences on the direct market and placing that into potential jeopardy. Because what would really suck is if the direct market continues down this path towards a multiple distributor model, and there can be advantages to that, but if it does so in a way that weakens Diamond, and then these other distributors aren't strong enough to go for the long haul, we could be looking at something that sets up the market to, you know, implode in some respect in a couple of years down the line.
Yeah, no, I completely agree in terms of it weakens Diamond just enough, and the other ones never really got out of the crib, basically.
Yeah, I don't think we're going down that path, because I don't think this is going to substantially weaken Diamond in and of itself. Other impacts of the pandemic, however, could be. Don't know. So we're definitely in uncharted territory here, and while I wish these new distributors well, I think the rush to spin them up has put them at a disadvantage. And I'll admit, I'm a little frustrated having sent an email the weekend they were announced saying, hey, I do sales reporting for CBR. I do it for my podcast. I'd like to include you guys. I get you probably haven't figured out how you're going to report sales, but could I at least see an order form? You know, can you give me whatever you can give me? And to not even get a reply to the email, a little frustrating. Now, granted, they've got a lot on their plate to spin themselves up. I get that. But it comes down to moving forward, particularly with the, I'm assuming I'm not going to get probably April data from Diamond because they didn't distribute and invoice stuff in April. Okay, that's going to mess up maybe my number crunching on the comic side, not so much on the trade side, but okay, that is what it is. But come May, should I be factoring in these other distributors or not, and do I have the data with which to do it? I mean, at this point, I haven't even seen order forms from Lunar or UCS.
Yeah.
Now, people are probably thinking, well, if I'm reporting on sales, what's it matter if I see the order form or not? Well, on the comic side, I've got a pretty in-depth data cleaning process to take the inconsistent titles of from issue to issue of a single title, standardize that, figure out which volume it is based on, when it was solicited, when it ships, all that kind of stuff, and clean that up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have that on the trade side. Now, the reason I don't have that on the trade side is how many times have we seen multiple volume ones of title XYZ that are different, not only books, they're collecting different comic title volumes.
Yeah.
But they're available concurrently and they could be reoffered concurrently, so it's not like I could use the Diamond order code to say, oh, well, if it was ordered in 2019, it's this volume versus that volume. Whereas I can do that on the monthly comic side. So depending if the titles are like a perfect text match between how they're listed by Diamond, Lunar, and UCS, maybe I can merge them together, maybe I can't. I don't know yet. And it's one of those things that I'd like to be able to include the new distributors because I'd love to see, hey, they're accounting for Diamond having dropped by X percent because, you know, some of it went to UCS, some of it went to Lunar. And we're at a net increase, a net decrease, whatever it winds up being. I can only do that if I get data from the other distributors.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting at this point until I get some kind of, you know, response from them. And certainly until I get some sort of data, even if it's just the shape of what the data looks like. We're planning on releasing, you know, the data in this format. Okay, that gives me something to work with. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know.
Yeah, I know. I almost wonder if, you know, resending that email in a month or two, once they've had their first kind of month or two off the ground, they may be more receptive. Like you said, they may just have their head down. So, you know, just trying to get off the ground right now. But, you know, we'll see.
And I probably will resend it. I just need to give them a little time to, you know, spin up. And I get they're probably overwhelmed with retailers saying, hey, what's going on with this? And ironing out the kinks of distribution in and of itself is a big ask.
Mm-hmm.
So again, no shade being thrown on them. It's just, you know, this is something that because Diamond's been around forever and a day, they have all this in place already. It gives them an inherent advantage. So I'm curious how all of this is going to play out. If any of the listeners happen to have seen an actual order form from Lunar or UCS and they can send me a copy, please do so. That would be a huge help. But moving forward at this point, until I get data from them, I can't include it, so we'll see what happens with just the Diamond stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, speaking of the Diamond stuff, if we look at the breakdown for March, and again, in March, beginning of the month, the coronavirus, as it was called at the time, was happening elsewhere in the world. It wasn't really a U.S. problem. It wasn't called COVID-19 at that point, and it was not a pandemic at that point, at the beginning of the month. That quickly changed. By the middle of the month, we were having stay-at-home orders in California, in New York, in Texas, so some of the biggest states right there, as well as many other states and communities. By the end of the month, Diamond had basically said, not basically, they literally said, we're not going to distribute comics starting April 1st. So, big amount of change in that month. Now, again, all of the data we're looking at is based on the invoiced sales to retailers from what they had pre-ordered in advance. So I don't think these sales reflect the impact of the pandemic really at all. Now, the big question is, since this is sell-in information, what made it into the stores, I would have loved to have had sell-through information to understand how many of these trades are sitting on store shelves even today. Because we've got some stores that have been open the entire time and have had no problem moving merchandise. Other stores that have been shut down for a month and a half or so. Some which may be able to do curbside or delivery or mail order. Some of which may not be able to. So I think the position different retailers are in could be very, very different right now in a way that just hasn't historically been true in the market.
Gotcha.
Now, 27.5% of the units went to Marvel. 20.23% went to DC, 9.53% of the units went to Image, We had, 7.78% go to Dark Horse, 7.04% to IDW. Viz doing pretty well with 5.25% of the units. Boom with 5.06%. And then way further down on the list with only one item, and it was reorder to boot on the list this time around, Dynamite with 0.32% of the total units. So there's a certain aspect of, if you just don't have anything come out, you're not going to sell great.
Yeah.
If we look at the numbers by percent of the retail dollars, i.e. the cover price for the sales of the top 300, Marvel goes all the way up to 37.11%, DC to 24.17%, Image 7.21%, although it was outdone by Dark Horse, which had lower unit sales but higher retail dollar sales and accounted for 7.46%, and then IDW did 5.63% of the retail dollars, Boom 3.31%, Dynamite 0.4%. So definitely not a good month for Dynamite. Again, luck of the draw as to what comes out. The other thing I want to point out about the breakdown on the trades list for the top 300 this time around, we had 40 publishers on the list this time. Now, that struck me as being a lot. It's one shy of an all-time record during the Final Order era.
Interesting.
In June 2009, we had 41 different publishers on the list. In October of 2009, we had 40 publishers on the list. That and this month are the only time we've hit 40 publishers or more in the top 300 trades.
Yeah, I think continues a trend that we've seen in the, it used to be that you could, the top four or five premier publishers would severely dominate this list. But because the total number of sales, at least in the direct market, has come down in terms of, the average per book, like whenever we look at the top 10, when there's very popular series like Saga or Walking Dead coming out, we're oftentimes used to seeing unit sales over 10,000. And now if it's over 5 or 6,000, we think it's a good month. You know what I mean? So like just the scale of success is coming down, at least as reported in the direct market. And then what that allows is books that usually move a lot less volume are, populating the list. And obviously that's more common in the different publishers,
Absolutely. If Image had this month, say, a Walking Dead or a Saga new trade come out, that would be another 10, maybe 20,000 units. That could have been enough to get them above DC this month. But, Walking Dead has ended. Saga is on hiatus. So that didn't happen. So definitely, I think the trades have always been, a more level playing field than the monthly comics side. Not to say you can necessarily, top the list or whatever, but you've got a better chance of getting your trade out there and seen by more people than I think you do on the monthly or weekly comics side, where it's just a much more crowded marketplace.
Yeah. And, I think there's just a lot more sales that are going to other markets or other distributors, more stores or, creating accounts with, the book publishers, which offer returnability, quicker turnaround, free shipping, more sales are going to Amazon. You're just seeing a general siphoning, I think, of the collected edition market, or I should say a spreading out of that of the total units there.
Absolutely. And to reiterate, what we're looking at is the sales through Diamond. So any of these trades that are available that somebody buys on Amazon or through somebody who got it through Ingram or one of the other distributors or stuff, or moving forward through Lunar or UCS, will not be included on this because this is data provided by Diamond of what has moved through them. Now, the questions I have around this moving forward, we're in a very different economic time right now than even we were in March, which this data is for. We're in a record high unemployment that we haven't seen since, I think, the Great Recession or whatever and stuff, Great Depression, whatever. I mean, in decades. Really, I think it goes back to, our grandparents' kind of work time. So I think we're finding a lot of people out of work or really looking at their budget or having trouble making ends meet or some combination of all of that. So we're going to see a tightening of the belt on spending on discretionary things such as trade paperbacks. Now, do we see then a corresponding shift at retailers who are thinking, I've considered going to one of these other distributors, but, it was more hassle than it was worth. sure, returnability sounds good, but I can always just throttle back my orders through Diamond and control it that way. Do they decide, you know what, maybe now's the time to go open one of these accounts at one of these other distributors and really kind of mitigate the risk because maybe that returnability is going to make a bigger deal?
Absolutely. And the other thing I was thinking is this leads it directly into discussion of with the coming recession and the coming tightening of a lot of people's budgets. You know, I'm wondering about if this is finally going to do what I think comics has needed to do, especially at Marvel and DC, trim the lines. And you've seen, you know, Marvel, I think, is going to be doing just digital for some of the lower selling series for, you know, at least finish out the whatever has currently been pending. And I think some of that is just because they don't want to channel stuff when the things come back. They don't want to overload the stores. But if that's successful, they may continue to move some of those series to all digital and only print stuff that's successful. Or you just may see, you know, instead of publishing 100 things a month, maybe Marvel goes to 75 instead of 60, DC goes to 45, 50. You know what I mean? I am interested to see if we see some winnowing of all this expansive lines, you know, like 15 X-books, 12 Spider-Man books. You know, do we really need all those?
No, I know exactly what you're talking about, and that's actually gotten quite a bit of discussion lately on our Slack channel, which I know you don't tend to get on.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those things where a lot of people are cutting back, they're saying as such. Even Mike Myers, who had been getting just, I think, a staggering amount, and let's face it, a few years ago I was getting quite a bit. He was getting more than me then.
Uh-huh.
He's talking about cutting his new comics order back by like $500 or something.
Gotcha.
And he's got a whole episode on it. I haven't had time to listen to the episode, but that's not the kind of decision I think he would make lightly or on the spur of the moment, and I'm sure he's got great justification. And this is one of those things where I think a lot of people are taking a look at where they're at in their life, where they want to go in their life, where their job is at, where they want to go in their job, and most importantly, where their money is at and where they want their money to go. Mm-hmm. And some people are just saying, you know what? We're in uncertain economic times. I'm going to get more conservative in my spending, maybe save more, maybe not, you know, whatever. So everybody's going to react how they need to react. But I do think that we're going to see lower sales moving forward for a variety of reasons. People cutting back, publishers throttling back. I mean, Marvel's release schedule moving forward. We got to talk about Marvel for a bit on this because I'm still trying to figure out when to or if to shift from kind of that Monday anchor episode currently being a back issue spotlight. And do I go back to a weekly comic spotlight format? And if so, when?
Mm-hmm.
Because with May 20th, we're starting to get new comics through Diamond. My retailer, which is Cowabunga, is staying with Diamond. So for me, no new comics till then. Okay, I'm fine with that. I'm getting 11 comics that week, 5 from DC, 5 from Marvel, and one other. If I were to try to shift back to the weekly comic spotlight format at that point, well, gosh, I guess I know what the other comic we're reviewing is.
Uh-huh.
We got the one choice. And that's just from what I'm getting. There's, you know, what's James getting and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So we're going to hold off doing that for a little bit because I looked at Marvel's release schedule through the middle of July. And I've talked about this on the back issue spotlight lately around the when do we move back and stuff. But I'm getting, based on what Marvel's planning on releasing for the coming weeks, 3 Marvel comics on May 27th, none on June 3rd because they're not releasing any issues that week, 3 on June 10th, none on the 17th because they're not releasing any issues that week, 3 on the June 24th, none on July 1st, and 3 on July 8th. So at that point, there's, you know, a 33% chance, based on what I'm getting, what we'd be reviewing kind of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
It's slim pickings. So just based on that versus I have had weeks in the past back when I was getting more, and I filtered this down to only the items I was getting and stuff, I'd be getting, you know, a dozen Marvel comics. Some weeks when I was, you know, going whole hog, I'd be getting 2 dozen Marvel comics. So are we going to see things shrink down on the monthly side for comics? Absolutely. Now, if they're throttling back how many issues they're releasing on the monthly side, and we're getting an issue of Avengers over the course of May and the first half of July, and really April for that matter, you know that's going to slow down trade releases later in the year.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to see drop-off in sales there, because simply not as much is offered.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, and then factor in this other decision Marvel has made of we're going to take certain titles and switch them to digital-only releases. Now, the ones they have announced so far are Ant-Man number 4, mm-hmm. and presumably later issues like Ant-Man number 5, Avengers of the Wasteland number 4, Ghost Spider number 9, Ravencroft number 4, all of those from, I guess, the week of May 13th, and then from May 20th, 2020 Ironheart number 1, Marvel's Spider-Man, The Black Cat Strikes number 4, Hawkeye Freefall number 5, and Star number 4. And yeah, I read through the same list on the last back issue spotlight I just did with James. And I'm getting, or I was getting, Ant-Man and Star.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, I believe, 5-issue miniseries. It's been a while since I read the last issue, so I could be off, but I'm pretty sure they're 5-issue miniseries. I've gotten the first 3, and the last 2 are going digital only with the plan to do a print trade at some point.
Yeah. And I wonder if this is just Marvel, like I said, knowing that they can't release everything to the direct market in print right away of stuff because it would kill the stores, because a lot of stores are week to week in terms of what they can pay for. And they also realize these were low selling series in and of themselves, and it's not worth, you know, the hassle of printing them and actually shipping them and all that. So let's just do that. Have you seen any of those be the more frontline titles, or are they still going to do those?
The highest selling of those titles that they're going digital only with is Star, and the 3rd issue sold 22,641. So 22,641 units. I'm not going to say that's a high selling title.
No.
I'm not going to say that's a low selling title. I think if you were to use 22,600 units as a cutoff point and said, you know what, anything below that is just not worth putting out there. And in fairness, that's essentially what some of the people on our Slack channel were saying. Oh, it's bottom feeding stuff. It's dreck. It's stuff that shouldn't have been greenlit anyways. And I'm not going to disagree with some of that in terms of should it have been greenlit. There's a few of these things. No, probably not. Is it dreck? Is it, you know, bottom of the sales charts? Well, those are two very different things. Objectively, some of these things, like that Marvel Spider-Man Black Cat Strikes thing, 9,023 units, that's low selling. No argument. Is it dreck? Is it garbage? Is it stuff that, you know, is junk? I'm not going to say that. The reason I'm not going to say that is, one, I don't believe it. I may not like some of those things, because there's some of those things I am definitely not getting for a couple of reasons, but beauty is in the eye of the beholder. The minute we start saying, I think this is not good stuff, which is a subjective thing, and then claiming it's an objective metric, and therefore it should not see the light of day at all, I think we've made a bad choice. Because I think I can go through the top 500 comics list for the last year and find stuff close to the bottom of that list that I think is some exceptionally good material, or at least stuff I'm interested in reading. But if we were to say, hey, you know, 20,000 or 22,000 units or below at DC or Marvel for a title, you know, below that, just cut it off at the knees, be done with it, put us out of our misery sort of a thing, that's harsh. I don't believe that. I don't think that's good for the industry, because then what we're going to get is, well, how come we're only seeing, you know, X-Men, Batman? Why aren't we seeing more variety in other titles? Well, because you said to kill those things off, they weren't selling well enough. Sure, you loved them because it was different, it was new, it was a niche product. But now you're saying go for lowest common denominator, things that are sure sellers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've had this struggle of how many items do we kick out into the market and stuff over time, and having had too much, and now being in a position where the market is a lot more fragile, and we have to slow down the release of new material to not overwhelm stores, yet still provide enough for the stores to make money and stay open. And man, I don't know where that sweet spot is, and I sure hope somebody at Marvel, at Diamond, at DC, at wherever knows that. Because the amount of stuff Marvel's releasing in, you know, May, June, and the first half of July, so for 2 months there, I don't think is enough to sustain the market. I don't know what the other publishers are doing, and I'm not suggesting they should be going whole hog and, you know, kick up Empire in full force and, you know, get that Batman 92 with punchline and stuff out there, you know, and overwhelm the market either.
Yeah, it's an interesting conundrum, right? Like, you know, the stores have clearly said, do not send everything, you know, all at once, right? But at the same time, you need to send enough product, and also product that will sell instead of the bottom line stuff. You need to send a good mix, and that's a hard, you know, considering how each store is so tailored to their market sometimes, or poorly run or well run, depending, you know, it's interesting. I almost wonder if they, you know, in fear of oversending material, they undersend, and then the stores that are really cash flow stores don't have enough product to sell to keep themselves open.
Well, Daphne Byrne was listed as one of the titles that was going to go in, I think, the first week of releases through the new distributors, and kind of explicitly because it was a lower selling title. Now, its third issue sold 13,182 units in March, and that's more than Hawkeye, Ant-Man, and Marvel's Spider-Man Black Cat Strikes sold.
Mm-hmm.
So one publisher is saying, you know what, this is what we're going to use to slowly spin things up. Another one's saying, you know what, it's not even worth putting out. And I'm not disagreeing with either publisher on that. I'll admit, I am not happy with Marvel's decision to take two of the miniseries I have financially and emotionally invested in to some degree and say, you know what, if you want to finish it, we're boarding it to trade. So you're going to essentially have to double dip on those first three issues to get the two we didn't give you in print before.
Well, and you know what's interesting, John? And I'll say this and you can take it either way. This is highlights a very different reality for comics reading for me and you. For me, even if I was getting the single issues and they did this to me, I would just spend the small amount of money to order the remaining issues digitally so I could read to finish the story. Because for me, comics is primarily reading the story, enjoying the art, and then that's it. Yes, I do collect certain things, but I read 10 times what I actually buy and own. You know what I mean? Like I don't,
mm-hmm.
I will read digitally, or I'll check out of the library. And then if something really blows my socks off, I will put it on the list and eventually buy a hardcover version of it for my shelf. But the vast majority of stuff is, you know, a B plus or a C. And I don't, you know, once I read it once and that's it. You have a much more aspect of the collectorism. You know, that's just kind of how you came to comics. And that's, you are much more the normal comics buyer in that you start a series or a run in paper. You want to finish it in paper and it really gets stuck in your craw. But, and I think you are very representative, but it's just interesting for me. Marvel's announcement would be annoying, but I'd just be like, whatever. If I actually care about that series, I'll read the last two issues in digital and move on. You know what I mean? So it's just it's interesting.
Yeah, definitely. It's a difference in how we read. I think how much of what you read is in the individual issues? How much of it is in the collected edition?
Well, and that's the other thing. For me, it's even less so in that I wasn't reading the series to start with until it gets to collected edition anyway. So
yeah, and there's nothing right or wrong about either approach. I think these days, if you are starting to read comics, man, there's a lot to be said for starting with the collected editions. You get a bigger installment, a full story. You don't run the risk of either not getting the full story or forgetting where it was at when it finally continues, you know, yeah, months later or years later.
And then, you know, not to throw sand in the wound, but the other benefit is if you're ordering from places like DCBS or in-stock trades, a lot of times when the collected editions come out, you're getting 45 to 50% off, and they were already priced cheaper than if you just added up the $3.99 an issue. You know what I mean? So you're saving money on top of getting that whole story on top of, you know what I mean? So.
No, I know exactly what you mean. And I think what some people may not fully appreciate is there is going to be a contingent of the readership of these couple of titles going digital only. Now, obviously, it's not a large contingent, but it's a contingent. And let's face it, it's not a big pie we're talking about because these are not brilliantly selling titles. I mean, the highest was under 23,000 units. But there is a contingent of these readers that are going to say, you know what? This is one more time you've aborted. I've had a title aborted to trade. Maybe I shouldn't invest in the miniseries. Maybe I should just wait for it to get collected. And if it gets good buzz, I'll pick it up then.
Mm-hmm.
And if we shift too many more readers from the monthly side to the collected edition side, there comes a point where, one, that collected edition isn't paying for the content creation for the most part of new material. We have exceptions on the list. We'll get to a few of those if we get to the list and stuff. But by and large, content creation is on the individual issue side. So mm-hmm. if you don't have enough there, it just doesn't work. You don't have enough to collect. You know, it just, there are certain small publishers I stopped dealing with in terms of reading their material because I invested in a miniseries and routinely it felt like they would do this abort to trade kind of a move.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, if I'm subsidizing the creation of the content and then you're asking me to double dip to go get that final chapter or something, I'm not having it.
Yeah.
And there are going to be some people, it's like, yeah, okay, fine, I'll pick it up in digital or whatever, but is that not going to shift people so, you know, hey, if I'm getting this in digital, why don't I just get the other stuff, you know, in digital? And does that, do we see things coming in play at this point that are going to shift reading habits towards digital, towards trades, or in other ways that are not necessarily to the long-term health of the industry? And I don't know. I think it's a definite question that has to be asked.
Yeah.
Because we are seeing changes to how people are reading. And I think what's worse is we're not seeing and understanding changes to how people are reading. Because I know for me, the amount of new comics I have read over the last, as we record this on, May 10th? So really for the last almost month and a half now, 5-6 weeks, I've obviously gotten zero new comics.
Mm-hmm.
I've been rereading Doomsday Clock. I've been reading for the first time many of the Earth One hardcovers and such. And you know what? I'm not really finding myself missing the influx of comics that I feel I normally would have.
Mm-hmm.
Now, part of that is I don't have this growing stack of unread material. If anything, I've got a dwindling stack of unread material. And granted, not dwindling very fast because I'm not doing a whole lot of reading, but I've been reading novels, whatever. The point is, it is in some way going to impact how I'm reading comics moving forward.
Yeah. But I actually do think you highlighted on another aspect, and I think the direct market retailers have worried about this, breaking that Wednesday habit. You said you aren't reading, your stack of news material is dwindling, but not dwindling super fast because you're reading other things. And I think that's one of the things that retailers are worried about, is that the habit of coming in every week for Wednesday, maintain that that connection. And with so many other forms of entertainment, books, podcasts, video games, Netflix streaming, there, it has never been easier to float away from comics. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's ironic because I think comic properties are at an all-time high of general acceptance.
Mm-hmm.
And people know who some of what were obscure characters are. Anything from The Runaways on Hulu to, you know, Taskmaster and what was going to be the upcoming, and still is, I guess, Black Widow movie that was going to be released by now.
Mm-hmm.
Comics are something that, other than the printing side of it, generally don't take a large group of people in close physical proximity to produce.
Mm-hmm.
This was and is an opportunity for comics to have really gotten a large mind share, even if not a dollar share or market share, so to say, but they could have actually gotten a lot of people hooked. This would have been a great time for DC to have found some way to get the comics side of DC Universe such that it could have been a free tier offering to people out there during the pandemic. Likewise, I'm pretty sure Marvel had some kind of a discount on the Digital Comics Unlimited type stuff. But again, if you can get people and start the habit of reading comics, then when the print comes back, there's an opportunity to potentially transition them into print.
Mm-hmm.
At the very least, they're reading the material, and that's, you know, if you can do that at no risk, that seems like a win.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we're going to see definite changes over the remainder of the year, because some of these are going to take a while to be felt. Again, this slower release schedule from Marvel and some other publishers isn't going to hit the trade side until later in the year. When we get that Ant-Man trade, that Starman trade, that Avengers of the Wasteland trade, are we going to see them do better? Because some of the people in print said, you know what, yeah, fine, I'll get the trade, even though I've got the first three issues, or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and are we even going to remember that by the time we see those trades on the list? It's a really bizarre time we're in right now, and this is part of why I'm thinking so many of what we had been considering true, just de facto trends of the industry, we need to open our minds and say, you know what, this is what has been true historically. Maybe it is, maybe it isn't.
Mm-hmm.
The digital does not cannibalize print sales has been a mantra for the last couple of years, and I would argue over the last almost decade, when we've had day-and-date digital releases since, you know, 2011, really with the start of DC's rebirth, which kicked off that whole movement, I would agree, yeah, digital hasn't really decimated print sales. You know, has it bitten into it a little? Maybe, but not in a, yep, this is definitely a problem kind of a way. But now that I personally am in a position where I could have gotten the depending how you look at it, the last or the next issue of Hawkman, of Flash, of maybe some other DC titles, digitally first through Comixology before my retailer can get them to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a different ballpark. There may be some people who say, you know what, I've just been getting it off the rack at the store, I'll just get it digitally. And boom, we've converted them to a digital reader. Don't know how much that may or may not happen. But I think we've been seeing a softening on the trade sales for a while. And I think some of that is general marketplace stuff. I think some of it is some of the higher selling items like Walking Dead, like Saga, not really available anymore these days. So we haven't had those big name trade releases or whatever. Moving forward, I don't know if we're going to see people leaning towards or away from trades as they decide, you know what, with this slower release schedule, I'm not getting the story momentum I've been getting, so I'm better off having waiting for the trade and getting that. Or are they saying, it's been so long since I've gotten anything, I want something. I
mean, yeah,
I can see market forces moving the needle in either direction. And that's just a bizarre place to kind of be in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if we look at the top trades list, the top item was under 4,000 units. It was Once and Future Volume 1 from Boom Studios with 3,906 units, which, again, not lighting the world on fire compared to how we've seen a Saga, a Walking Dead, or some other, you know, high-profile collected editions do. But I don't think that's necessarily bad for a Boom title. Boom also had Something is Killing the Children Volume 1 trade paperback at rank number 2 with 3,436 units, so Boom took the top two slots, which is, I think, good for Boom.
Mm-hmm.
Again, some of these things... It's funny, because Once in Future came out the last week of the month, whereas Something is Killing the Children, that trade came out the first week of the month.
Hmm.
If I had to guess at sell-through data, I would say Once in Future sold through much poorer then Something is killing the Children that was out there at the beginning of the month.
Interesting. Because isn't Once in Future that Kieran Gillen and Dan Mora, so it has pretty big creator names on it.
To me, the factor in this is less anything about the content and the creators,
mm-hmm.
as the difference in market situation between March 4th and March 25th.
Now I totally understand. You're right. Sell through versus sell in, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Because I don't know how many of these copies of Once in Future got to a store where they were doing good to open the doors, accept the package, and maybe get some out to a couple of customers. And they were thinking, you know what, this is a big name thing. I'll put it on the shelf. It'll get some walk-by traffic or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So and it may be that many of these stores are able to do mail order, do curbside, do drop-offs, or what have you, and it wasn't a big deal. Again, I think that situation is potentially very unique for every store, and they may fall into some broad categories and stuff, but I have no idea what percentage of stores have been under a you're not essential, do not open kind of order, or you can operate in some kind of limited capacity, or you're totally open with no, you know, encumbrance whatsoever, or somewhere in between all of those.
Mm-hmm.
And that's both in terms of how many stores fall into each of the various categories, and then what percentage of the overall sales fall into each of the categories. Now, this is something where if I were at Diamond and they have not invested in a data warehouse, and I certainly hope they have. I have no idea if they have or not. And if not, I'd love to work on such a thing. But man, having a ability to put together some kind of a dashboard where you can see hotspots in terms of West Coast, Texas, New York, or Chicago, or wherever, these are where a higher percentage of your unit sales are, and then compare that to a map of what has lockdown orders, what doesn't, and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Because every retailer has been clamoring for what's best for them, but what's best for a store out, you know, in California that's been under tight lockdown orders for a month and a half now is very different than a store in a rural area that hasn't had any kind of a lockdown order and may have been starving for product that one of these stores at a more densely populated area just couldn't accept because of the conditions in their area.
Exactly, yeah.
So everyone who's saying, well, it's clear they should do thus and so, I fear is potentially either trivializing the situation or overlooking a lot of the complexities that are out there.
Yeah, and I think the reality is that some stores, if they're unlucky enough to be in some states that are still, you know, closed down for longer, it's going to be tough for them, you know, because, you know, certain states are going to get access to products, certain states are going to get up and running, and then you know how the comics internet is. As soon as something comes out, everyone blabs about it and spoils it, and it's just going to be rough. It's going to be rough.
I am curious as to the potential impact of spoilers on that issue of Hawkman, on that issue of Flash, on these titles Marvel's going digital only with. You know, and does that have a negative impact on sales? Or maybe it's a positive one because people are saying, oh, I heard all about it. Let me go get it when it comes out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a bizarre, I know I keep saying it, but it is a truly bizarre time in the industry. And then again, we only had four items on the list over 3,000 units. Immortal Hulk, Volume 6, trade paperback, 3,420 units. DC Superhero Girls Powerless, 3,336 units. Now, that one is an original, essentially, digest, I guess. So we are seeing some original material on the trades list. And a bit of it from DC, because we've got that down at rank number 8. We've got Oracle Code with 2,474 units. And I think elsewhere on the list, they've released a few other things. The Grayson novel, kind of those all ages or Zoom Inc., whatever they were imprinted as at one point, titles. So DC is experimenting with original to trade sort of items, predominantly with different versions of their mainstream characters. And I think there's pros and cons to that. You may get readers from a larger demographic, but the question is, can you then transfer them into other titles? Or are they used to seeing, you know, the Barbara Gordon and Oracle Code and not relating to her in the Batgirl title or something?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we only had another, seven items over 2,000 units. And by the time we hit rank 60, we've dropped just below 1,000 units. Again, based on orders before the pandemic hit.
Yeah, this is, it's going to be interesting to see when we do get more diamond numbers to see how low this is going to go.
Yeah, it's interesting because, again, I'm assuming no data for April because, well, April, they were shut down. By the time we get May, we're going to have half a month's worth of data. So the minute you start looking at the aggregates, and this is a discussion I have with Sam and Eric on the comic side, the aggregates are going to look bad because it's just half a month's worth of material.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we're in need potentially of additional metrics to give us some kind of levelized, taking into account the less material released, the ability to do some kind of apples-to-apples comparison. How can we compare half of May to all of March? And then out of that, what can we attribute, if anything, to, oh, well, this is because of the pandemic. This is because of other distributors being out there or other factors coming into play.
Mm-hmm.
Because some of it may just be, yeah, it was a down month because, you know what, just nothing good came out. You know, you're going to have a better month whenever we get Empire, that event getting collected to trade, than a month where, Once in Future was, again, top-selling item this time.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing wrong with that, but, you know, if Marvel or DC had an event or if Image had a top-selling title release a new trade, probably could have topped the list fairly easily. I mean, I don't think it's unrealistic to have expected there to have been something that sold 4,000 units in the March timeframe, if yeah. the right thing had been released.
Yeah, yeah. And that is an aspect of the trades that's a little tough, is because you're kind of held hostage by the calendar, and depending on when they're releasing stuff. But, you know, we can, if you look over enough time, you can see the trend. We just used to see such higher sales for the top 10, and I think that's especially informative in terms of making looking at those trends. Is what does the top 10 look like? What does the top 100 look like? How long does it take you to fall out of 2,000 to 1,000 unit sales, considering we think there are about 2,000-ish stores, you know? So when we're thinking about, is every store even getting a copy, or is, you know, if it's down at 500 unit sales, basically people are only ordering when they have an order, kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, again, the other thing that's going to happen and has happened with this pandemic is some stores are closing down permanently.
That's true.
any store that was kind of on the edge, living, you know, week to week or whatever, man, the shutdown of new material, that in and of itself can put them out of business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or if they're doing okay, even if they'd have material, maybe the local readership is, you know, working jobs that just get decimated by the economic impact of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as we were talking about before we started recording, there are some jobs you can easily do at home. There are other jobs you cannot.
Yes.
So just based on the nature of your job, maybe determining, do you have a paycheck? Can you buy whatever you want to buy right now?
Mm-hmm.
And certainly for anyone that is out of work or even furloughed or otherwise worried about their economic future, I mean, I feel for you, and I hope, you know, everyone does okay on this. And that not only impacts the readership, but man, that's impacting all the creators who've been under pencil down orders for a while now. All of those that had deals that were almost through, but, you know, have been pulled back because of, well, you know, we're shifting the timeline on everything. Or had work that was, like, related to a movie tie-in or something like that, and the movie's been pushed back better part of a year or something. So guess what? That project is too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of ripple effects going on right now, and I don't think we're going to see the end of that for a few, more than a few months. I mean, it's going to take a while before we even get to where we can start to approach normal, and I think even longer before we get to, if ever, back to the numbers we'd been seeing before and the number of items released we were seeing before. And again, we've raised the question, should we see that many items coming out?
Yeah, I will dip. I've thought for a long time, especially at Marvel, that they're just publishing too much stuff and they could probably cut at least 20 to 25 titles at the bottom of theirs. But I think they've always been more of the, you know, we want to crowd out other books on the wall kind of thing. And so I don't think they mind doing it, but we'll see if they think it's sustainable for the stores. We'll see.
Yeah, I think it's going to be very interesting to see, not necessarily the next previews, but maybe the one after it, when the dust has started to settle a little bit and the publishers have had a chance to really kind of think through a longer term strategy. Do we see less things coming out? And how does it change what they green light? Do we see things that are, yeah, this is obviously just, it's going to sell because, man, look at it. It looks great on paper and it's going to be great when it's on paper. Or do they also start to pick and choose a little more carefully and try these riskier things on a more limited basis that can lead to, say, Animal Man, when Grant Morrison did it back in the day. 4-issue limited series that went on for, I don't know, how long did that title go? 170 issues or something crazy?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are times where you need to do something that you think is very niche because it could be a big hit. But there's also times where maybe you just need to go for the, yeah, this is a safe bet, let's stick with that. And I think people are going to be, on the reading side, unhappy in either extreme, because if it's only the surefire hits, it's like, well, how come I'm not getting something like X, Y, and Z that I was getting 2 years ago that I really loved? Sure, it was quirky and stuff, but I loved it because it was quirky. Well, quirky doesn't necessarily sell.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's, I certainly hope everybody in the industry gets a lot more data-aware and data-driven decision-making-driven to where they can be looking at what's a calculated risk. Sure, we project it's going to do probably X, but based on what we know of the content and stuff, there's a chance it could do Y sales. Could do great. We'll take a calculated risk once in a while, do that kind of a thing. But otherwise, trying to figure out what's really clicking with readers and why, to where you don't fall into the kind of the cargo cult mentality of repeating things because that's how you think the universe works. For anyone not familiar with the cargo cult terminology, it's basically, I believe, dates back to maybe beyond, but at least to the World War II era, where I could be totally misremembering the origin of this, so if I'm wrong, I apologize. But in the Pacific, they were, you know, people that just hadn't really encountered, you know, aircraft and stuff like that. They'd see people flying over, cargo shipment would get dropped, and they would pray to the god of the plane or whatever. Bottom line is, whatever they had been doing that led to that unusual circumstance happening, they would repeat, thinking it might lead to that unusual circumstance happening again.
Mm-hmm.
Not really getting an accurate cause-effect relationship built up because they didn't have all the information.
Exactly.
You know, do people say, you know what, we just need more Batman titles because Batman sells, or we need to completely, you know, redo everything about this franchise because, well, look at Dawn of X, Powers of X. Man, if we do a House of A, Powers of A kind of a thing, Avengers will sell through the roof. Maybe it will, maybe it won't. It depends if you understood what made it House of X, Powers of X work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you think just doing another Batman title is going to get you sales because, well, Batman's popular, there comes a point where you are right until you are wrong.
Yeah.
It comes down to the turkey that's very happy because he's at the farm, he's getting fed, he's getting treated really well, and he's like, yeah, I got nothing to worry about. The sun rises, the farmer comes out, he feeds me, all is good in the world. I don't got to worry about, you know, anything like the rest of you animals where he's chicken, he's stealing your eggs, and pig, he's killing one of you every couple of days. That's great up until Thanksgiving rolls around, the turkey gets beheaded and eaten.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Grass is always greener on the other side, right?
Well, deductive reasoning only works to an extent.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? And we have hit that point where the unprecedented has happened. We have stopped distributing for 6 weeks. 7 weeks, I think it, 6 weeks, no, seven, of new comics and trades through Diamond. We're spinning up new distributors, we're throttling back the output of publishers. A lot of change is happening right now. And that's in addition to any change that was happening story-wise on all of this stuff. Because in a non-pandemic world, we would have had Free Comic Book Day already. We would have had Generation Zero, which is kicking off the whole 5G thing, maybe, that was going to start to happen at DC before Dan Didio left. Well, Dan Didio left, so is that going to happen? Is it not? What's going on there? So I think that as a reader, it behooves you to talk to your retailer, tell him as much as he's willing to hear or she's willing to hear about your economic situation and what you're planning on getting and not getting and why, to give them the information to be feeding that up to the distributor they're dealing with, or distributors plural they're dealing with, and the publishers and such. Because if retailers are ordering, and I'm sure they're not, on pre-pandemic numbers, and post-pandemic much lower sales come in, that could really hurt, you know, the retailers. I mean, we've got another wave of impact that's going to happen starting on the 20th. When all of these retailers that are sticking with Diamond exclusively start to see how things are going to play out in the post-pandemic world when they get that first shipment.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully it's great. Maybe it's not. We don't know. But based on these trade sales, man, I would not be happy if I was running a store that was based predominantly on trade sales that reflected these numbers. And note that I had a couple of qualifiers there. You could do great with a store that is reliant on trade sales if you are doing disproportionately better on trade sales either than this list, or you're able to get them through a better deal with returnability or a better deal through another publisher or distributor or something like that. But if you are a representative sample of this and say, you know, there are 2,000 stores and you are right there statistically average and doing 1/2,000th of this, so you would have sold, what, 2 copies of Once in Future or something like that on average, that doesn't seem like it puts you in a good position.
Yeah, and definitely, yeah, absolutely.
Now, one of the items I do want to call out at rank 37 is a trade paperback that did 1,310 units. It's Chrononauts Volume 2. Now, what's interesting about that is that was one that was released as 4 individual issues that were all dropped on the same day. So there was no huge advantage to wait for the trade for that one, other than maybe cost, let's see, $14.99. I'm trying to remember how much the individual issues of the 4-issue miniseries were, but I think this works out to maybe 25 cents cheaper a copy. If you got it at the what I think was the full $3.99 cover price, but I think the last one might have been more expensive, might have been $5.99. I find it interesting when you've got those odd cases where the whole thing was released at once, which doesn't happen often on the monthly comic side, and then boom, there's the trade paperback to be had later. And again, 1,310 units, not setting the world on fire, but it's in the top 40, so it's not doing bad at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to argue, as some people are, that say that 20,000 unit really ought to be the, the line on the top comic side where you just cut everything off, which this month would have been around, say, rank 87. So let's be nice and say anything out of the top 100 this time, they just shouldn't have bothered to print in collected edition. Should they not have done the Doom Patrol Silver Age Volume 2 trade paperback then?
Huh.
624 units? I mean, where do you draw the line as to what you feel is worth publishing and not, and why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a tough call, that's for sure.
Yeah, but I do think there are some of these things that, really, for all of these things, retailers are ordering a certain amount based on pre-sold aspect. In other words, I've got a pull list customer that wants it, or I don't have an official order, but man, I know this guy, he'd be all over this Doom Patrol collection if I can get it, so it's a safe bet to order it.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the spec kind of order where if I put it out, I think it'll sell. And then there's the long-term game of, I'm probably not going to sell this immediately, but I know if I put it on my shelf with my other collected editions, over time, this is something that'll benefit me to have. And I think we're going to see some throttling back on those spec sales, on those long-term sales, and more of a gravitation towards this is a safer bet and retailers needing to take less risk moving forward.
Oh, yeah, I think they'll, especially considering the unknown of what's going to be going on in terms of just the economy, let alone the direct market, you're going to see, I think, a lot of retailers being very cash sensitive in terms of holding on to their money. So if they don't know they can sell it, they're probably not going to order it. So especially from Diamond, obviously, if they can get returnability from some other, you know, distributors and or, you know, the publishers, then they might be a little bit more adventurous. But in general, I think you are going to see some retrenchment for sure.
Yeah, I think you should see some retrenchment.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're already having some retailers that have been leveraging the last, you know, month and a half to beef up their trade sales of stuff they've got. It's like, hey, I've got these things. Maybe I'll swing you a deal, give you 10% off or whatever, or just point out that, you know, since you can't go get your regular weekly fix of comics, you've been reading the X-Men stuff, you know, there's this great past collection of whatever. Maybe you should check it out, you know? And I think savvy retailers have been able to offset the loss of income from new comics by, you know, matchmaking their readers with the trades they have on hand. And if the readers are in there wanting to spend money and there's no new material and you've got material that suits them, that's an opportunity you don't normally have. Because I think a lot of times people go into the store, whether physically or metaphorically, that they see things and say, yeah, but that, I can only spend the $20 I got this week. Well, if you've only got the $20 and it normally would have gone to all or as much as you could have afforded of the new comics that you wanted that week, and suddenly there's none of that, now you can go pick up a trade, maybe two, depending on the deal and stuff like that. So I'm expecting to see on some stores those shelves that were packed with trades. Maybe they're not all spine out when you go back. Maybe a lot of them are face out now because they've been able to actually sell a number of them, and they're able to retrench on which trades are worth having on their shelves moving forward and which ones better off just reordering when the need arises.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely an aspect of, you know, survival of the fittest in that the direct market stores that continue to succeed going forward will be the ones that are the smartest and in terms of managing their inventory, managing their business. You know, you'll probably see more diversification of stores that stay open, like, you know, the Cowabungas, who they have multiple streams of income, not just comics related. Mm-hmm. And then also, you know, unfortunately, the stores that are, you know, just heavy superhero stores or don't do trades and, you know, that just are so specific, they may have the hardest time to survive and they won't survive.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to managing risk and diversifying to where you're not too reliant on any one product stream, any one publisher, and, you know, being responsive to what's going on with your particular, you know, customer base. Because I can see, again, how this can be just so different in the impact on two stores, even in close proximity. You know, here in Austin, Texas, and it's been a little while since I've surveyed all the local shops, but there was one that was right on the edge of the University of Texas campus. Now, certain times of the year, like when school is in session, that's a damn good location. You are within walking distance of 40, 50, 60,000 students plus associated faculty and supporting industry and stores, anyone who's interested in comics, man, you're the go-to place. You're right there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm imagining, because I haven't been in that neck of the woods since we've been under kind of stay-at-home orders for the last month and a half, I'm imagining that part of town is a bit of a ghost town right now.
Absolutely.
So is that store able to open? Should that store open? You know, all of that kind of stuff. Even when new comics start coming in on May 20th, is there any life on campus to sell it to?
Mm-hmm.
You know, other stores in town that may cater towards a more tech-savvy professional customer base in terms of they're not in college, they're doing programming, they're doing other things that are able to go work at home, no problem. They're still got their income, and they're looking for things to divert their mind with. Maybe those stores are going to do just fine. So I think it is going to be interesting to figure out, or to see if we can figure out, are there certain lines of products that do better than others under these circumstances? Do we see superheroes succeed or flounder in this coming market? Do we see the dystopic future sci-fi type stuff do better or worse moving forward?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe people are looking for the bright, shiny, happy, you know, Superman or Spider-Man saving the day kind of a thing. And you know, maybe they don't want to continue reading something like The Resistance that artists, writers, and artisans came out with shortly before the suspension of new comics distribution by Diamond, where it was a story about how a worldwide pandemic basically granted people superpowers.
There you go.
Maybe that hit a little too close to home. I know for me reading it, it was a little odd. So again, that's where I see a lot of the sales trends up for grabs moving forward.
Mm-hmm. And that makes sense. It's just one of those things where, again, it's the inherent problems in the comics industry. You don't have a lot of groups working together as they probably should. You have, you know, these few points of failure, the failure that are, you know, when you put pressure on them, the industry gets even creakier. The fact that we only have Diamond as a distributor, obviously that could potentially change going forward here. But, you know, just this is also exposed and or highlighted the risks of all the problems with the comics market as well. So we'll see.
Well, yeah. And a lot of these are acknowledged risks. I mean, I've said for many a year that the industry's always been kind of one bad decision away from potential destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have argued whether or not Diamond suspending new sales or new distribution was a good or a bad decision, or even a decision they had an option on. And I'm not going to weigh in on that, because I think there were certain things that determining if it was a good or bad decision to suspend new comics really depends on your vantage point.
Mm-hmm.
It was a bad decision for any store still open and reliant on new stuff. It was a good decision for any store effectively shut down and crippled by the response to the pandemic. And it comes down to knowing where the lion's share of the sales are geographically, and how those geographic areas are doing, to really kind of base those decisions on.
Yeah.
And I'm really hopeful that when Diamond spins stuff back up in a week or two on May 20th, that goes smoothly, that goes well, and the stores are ready for it, and it gives them the revenue stream that they need. Likewise, I hope that UCS and Lunar are able to spin up successfully. They've already had a week or two's worth of material go out. Sure, there are going to be some bumps in the road, but let's give them a chance to find their footing. I think having distribution options out there can be a very good thing for the market. I think out of all of the options out there for new distribution channels, picking retailers within the comic market has pros and cons. It does kind of promote two retailers to being, I don't say in some way or shape, better than the others, but at a different status than the others, which is a little unfair to some of the others that might have liked to have had a shot at it. But it's also something where picking people who understand the comic market, because they've been doing mail order distribution for a while, gives them a domain knowledge that somebody who had just been doing magazines or other periodicals that may have very different sales trends simply would not have had, and would not have been a good fit for this. So there's some definite advantage there, and I hope they are successful, because I do think having a monopoly, even if it's not an illegal one or whatever, but a de facto monopoly on new comic sales, it put Diamond in the position where it was able to improve on its own schedule. It was never kind of pushed to improve by the risk of their customers leaving to go to a competing distributor.
Yeah.
Even now, they are not in that position, because nobody can compete on even footing in terms of product offering with Diamond. And even if they could, they haven't had time to build up all of the other infrastructure that Diamond's got in place.
Mm-hmm.
But I think rules of the industry, such as publisher exclusivity, street dates even, are changing. Diamond is sticking with Wednesday. DC's going with Tuesday. We may see changes in returnability. We may see changes on discounting and other aspects moving forward. So I think it's good to have these changes start to happen in the industry. It is risky to have the number of changes and the significant of nature of changes we're having right now all at once.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious how all this plays out. I am cautiously optimistic. Probably focus more on the caution than the optimism. I don't think we're in dire straits right now, but I'm expecting not only to see lower overall sales moving forward, but lower sales kind of per title, per item going forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a question for how long and how much.
Yeah, I think that's very, very good thought. I think that's true. We'll just have to wait and see, right?
Yeah. If we look at the price points, $19.99 was the predominant price point in the top 300, with a little over two-thirds of the items being that price or lower, and about a third being higher than that. We had an item at $500, an item at $150, an item at $125, an item at $100 and such. I'm curious, in light of the pandemic, the changed release schedule, do we still see some of these higher tickets as often? Do we not? How does that play out? You know, again, I think we're just going to see a lot of things kind of resetting into whatever the new status quo kind of becomes moving forward.
Yeah, it's interesting times, I guess they say. You live in interesting times.
Yeah, that's, I think, the old Chinese curse or something.
Yeah.
It certainly gives us something to talk about, which I think is great. If people have questions or comments, please chime in on the forum, on Slack, or by email. We will have another one of these episodes when we have another one of these episodes, which is to say, I do not know if we're getting April data. I'm expecting not. I'm thinking we'll get May data, but I'm not certain. But whenever we get data, we'll take a look at it, see how it compares, and what we can deduce out of it and such. If I can include data from other distributors, I will. At this point, I don't have any such data. And even if I do get it, it will take me a while to figure out how to integrate it successfully into my process. So we'll see what happens on that.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
So anything else? Are we good?
That sounds good for this month.
Cool.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. The sales estimates can be found under the sales chart section of the Comic Book Page website. Please email us at themayoreport@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.
The views expressed by Don Mayo and his guests are their own and may or may not accurately reflect reality in any way, shape, or form. If you differ from your reality, please verify you are in the same space-time continuum before taking any action. All numbers given are estimates and only estimates. To think otherwise would be foolish. The estimates given are for sales from publishers to retailers for items invoiced through Diamond Comics Distribution for the month in question. The Diamond Order Index only goes two decimal places, and therefore there is a margin of error of at least 1/10,000th of the estimate for the key title, which is usually, but not always, Batman. For months in which no issue of Batman shipped, Detective Comics is usually used as the key title. Some numbers are rounded to the nearest 100 for convenience. This may introduce a further level of inaccuracy. No information about how many copies may or may not have sold to readers is included, implied, or denied. Anywhere from all of the units shipped to retailers to none of them could still be sitting on store shelves gathering dust. All reorder activity should be seen only as indications there's at least one retailer that may have an excessive amount of empty shelf space with dust it needs collecting. The list of the top 300 comic books only contains the top 300 comic books sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 300 different comic books may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 300 comic books for the month. The list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions only contains the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions sold through Diamond to retailers for the month in question. More than 100 different graphic novels and collected editions may have shipped during the month, and obviously not all of them will be included on the list of the top 100 graphic novels and collected editions for the month. In the past, lists of top graphic novels in collected editions contained only 50, 25, or as few as 10 items. This means that historical data about graphic novels in collected editions is increasingly limited the further back in time that you look. Fixing this may require time travel, which as far as I know now, has not been successfully invented in the past, present, or any possible or probable future. No visibility into the sales or lack of sales, any comic books, graphic novels, and or collected editions that are not listed on the top 300 comic books or top 100 graphic novels in collected editions lists is included, implied, or denied. The data from Diamond only contains data from Diamond. No information about sales or lack of sales of any item sold outside the Diamond Comics distribution channel is included, implied, or denied. That information is considered to be outside the scope of this report. If this isn't the data you're looking for, then this isn't the data you're looking for, and no amount of whining will change that. If you don't know why this disclaimer is here, then it probably isn't meant for you. This report is void in the ultimate reality of Duluth, Minnesota. Ask Bob to meaningless language itself, so you work very differently there.